Today in the Grey Lodge, we're going to unpack Twin Peaks The Return, Part 14, We Are Like the Dreamer, and we're going to reveal some of the truths about what's really going on with these doppelgangers and tulpas, and the action is really heating up, it's ramping up. I can't believe we're this close to the end, so join me in the Grey Lodge as we unpack Twin Peaks The Return. All right, getting right into it, Gordon Cole returns a call from Sheriff Frank Truman regarding missing pages from Laura's diary that Hawk found. Now, Gordon Cole can't comment on this because it's Blue Rose case stuff, but he, you know, appreciates it, right? So things are coalescing towards Twin Peaks. Albert is still reading in Tammy on the Blue Rose case, and he talks about the very first case of the Blue Rose situation. It's about a murder in 1975 in Olympia, Washington. And a woman named, sorry, my dogs are driving me nuts tonight. I don't know if you can't hear them barking. But listen to the case that Albert presents to Tammy and the origin of the phrase Blue Rose. Take a listen.
Tammy, case number one. This started the whole thing. 1975. Two young field agents investigate a murder in Olympia, Washington. They arrive at a motel to arrest a suspect named Lois Duffy. They hear a gunshot outside a room and kick the door in. They find two women inside. One on the floor dying from a bullet wound to the abdomen. The other holds a gun which she drops as she backs away when they enter. They recognize the wounded woman as Lois Duffy. She speaks her last words to them. I'm like the blue rose. She smiles, then dies, then disappears before their eyes. The other woman screaming in the corner, they now notice, is also Lois Duffy. By the way, Lois Duffy did not have a twin sister. Then while awaiting trial for a murder she swore she didn't commit, this Lois hangs herself. Those two arresting officers were Gordon Cole and Philip Jeffries. Now, what's the one question you should ask me?
What's the significance of the blue rose?
An answer.
Blue rose does not occur in nature. It's not a natural thing. The dying woman was not natural. Conjured. What's the word? A tulpa.
Good.
So there's the origin. The origin is this woman who shot herself, named Lois Duffy, says, I'm like the blue rose, and disappears. All right. And we heard Gordon Cole and Philip Jeffries were the FBI agents on the scene. That's where they're the first Blue Rose agents. So Tammy asks the significance of the Blue Rose, or Albert asks her, I should say. And she rightfully knows. She says it doesn't occur in nature, and it's like having a doppelganger. And she said they're conjured up like a tulpa. Now, this is very interesting because we talked about the history of Tibet being a crucial part of the show. Dale Cooper's always reading books about Tibet, in season one at least. And we know that tulpas are very specific to Tibetan occultism. If you read my alien books, Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, we talked about Use Your Illusion 1 and 2. We talked about this idea of tulpas. It goes back to Alexandra David Neal, who went to Tibet in 1924 after studying Blavatsky's obsession with all these Eastern religions and mysticism and the Tibetan region. And she witnessed supernatural activity in Tibet, supposedly. The Siddhis, which is like your supernatural powers of levitation, becoming invisible, walking through walls, crazy stuff. And kind of like in the autobiography of the Yogananda, he talks about being able to do all that, all the CDs, the superpowers. And she also witnessed tulpas. And we talked about how tulpas are consciously manifested entities magically formed through thought, right? The magician longs to see. This is about magic. And Alexandria concluded that tulpas can be dangerous. Quote, once the tulpa is endowed with enough vitality to be capable of playing the part of a real being, it tends to free itself from its maker's control. This, say Tibetan occultists, happens nearly mechanically. Just as the child, when his body is completed and able to live apart, leaves its mother's womb. Sometimes the phantom becomes a rebellious son, and one hears of uncanny struggles that have taken place between magicians and their creatures, the former being severely hurt or even killed by the latter. Now, you tell me that this isn't exactly what's going on in the world of Twin Peaks with Del Cooper and his doppelganger. We also can argue there's a quantum mechanics angle to all this. We know that space and time are connected. Einstein described it as a fourth dimensional entity called space-time, and that an object's mass curves space-time, which supports what they call action at a distance. Okay. And they talk about quantum entanglement and all kinds of stuff. And in the New Age concepts, they talk about manifesting through law of attraction, the idea that two objects are connected and influencing each other, even over great distances. In occultism, they call this the hermetic axiom, as above, so below. Everything is connected. That's the recurring theme found in all of these different sciences, you know, and belief systems. So Diane shows up, and Gordon Cole asks if the last night that she had talked to Cooper, if he mentioned anything about Major Briggs. She says, I'm not going to talk about that night, but she says yes. And they catch her up on the investigation. They even tell her about the ring inscribed to Janie E. Now, this is crazy, because at this point, we hear that Diane says, yeah, I've got a half-sister named Janie E., lives in Las Vegas, is married to Dougie Jones. Recall how her and Mr. C were exchanging text messages talking about Las Vegas and if the Blue Rose team had figured out to go there yet. Feels like a setup. So they call the Las Vegas FBI office trying to get information on Douglas Cooper and Janie E. We heard the Vegas FBI team, they say there's 23 Douglas Joneses in the area. 23. Interesting number, right? Because in Discordianism, you have the 23 enigma, the law of fives. It says that everything in nature and reality kind of occurs in the law of fives. So they dismiss Diane, and Gordon Cole tells them about how the other Blue Rose people, about how Sheriff Truman was calling him about the Laura Palmer diary and was talking about how there's two Coopers. And then he goes into detail about a dream he had with Monica Bellucci in France and how Cooper was there. He couldn't see Cooper's face. Another theme that we'll explore a little more in this series. And I want to point out how odd this is that we're all of a sudden talking about real life people, because Monica Bellucci is a real person, right? She's an actress, a very famous one. That'd be like saying, well, David Bowie was there. I mean, it's just odd. It doesn't fit in the world of Twin Peaks. It's very strange. This scene stands out very specifically and for a purpose. So I'm going to play a clip. It's a pretty long clip. And listen to what Gordon Cole talks about. He says, Monica says the ancient phrase, you're like the dreamer who dreams and then lives inside the dream. But who is the dreamer? Take a listen.
And then she said the ancient phrase,
you're like the dreamer. Dreams and then lives inside a dream.
We are like the dreamer who dreams and then lives inside the dream. I told her I understood. And then she said,
what? Who is the dreamer?
But who is the dreamer? A very powerful, uneasy feeling came over me. Monica looked past me and indicated to me to look back at something that was happening there. I turned and looked. I saw myself from long ago in the old Philadelphia offices, listening to Cooper telling me he was worried about a dream he had.
Gordon, it's 10:10 a.m. on February 16th. I was worried about today because of the dream I told you about.
And that was the day Philip Jeffries appeared.
Gordon!
And didn't appear.
Philip, is that you? Philip? Cooper, meet the long-lost Philip Jeffries. You may have heard of him from the Academy.
And while Jeffries was apparently there, he raised his arm and pointed at Cooper and asked me,
who do you think that is there?
Damn! I hadn't remembered that. Now this is really something interesting to think about.
Yes. I'm beginning to remember that too.
So let me try to recap what happened there. In the dream, Monica directs Gordon Cole to look behind himself, and then he is triggered to remember that Philly FBI office is where Cooper had told Gordon Cole about his dream on February 16th, and then Philip Jeffries shows up, right? I think this is a scene that was in Fire Walk With Me, and he notes how Jeffries pointed to Cooper and said, who do you think that is there? So now, clearly they're talking about trying to connect this idea of two different Coopers, Tulpas, doppelgangers. Things are starting to make sense, right? And recall in the Twin Peaks The Return Part 3 episode we did, I talked about Kenneth Grant's Beyond the Mauve Zone, and he explained how some people are better equipped to achieve the altered states of consciousness. He said, the artist, the poet, the musician, the dreamer whose dreams are capable of realizing the truth of the great inane. Now, I feel like Frost and Lynch read this particular book, because we saw Gordon Cole, he's an artist, right? David Lynch is an artist. He's a painter. And they show Gordon Cole drawing the dog last episode. He's an artist, right? And now they're literally using the same phrase, the dreamer who dreams. In the Kenneth Grant book, it's the dreamer whose dreams are capable of realizing the truths. And I think this scene is of incredible significance. This is a full-on David Lynch monologue, which we haven't really got much of that ever. And it's tying in all these different parts of the story, incorporating Monica Bellucci for no apparent reason. And this is where he stops the recollection of the dream, at the point where Philip Jeffries points at Cooper and says, who do you think that is there? And when we talk about the dreamer who dreams and who lives inside of it, that reminds me of a lot of New Age quantum thought, like Dr. Joe Dispenza's books. I only read one of them. But it was really powerful. It was really good. It's kind of the idea that you manifest your own reality. And he talks about the concept of samsara in there. I don't know if he uses the phrase, but he talks about that. He talks about how every day, like 95% of your actions are routine. You know what I mean? Like the alarm goes off, you get up, you take a leak, you get some coffee, you get dressed, whatever, right? You get it. Almost all of your day is exactly the same every single day. So if you want some radical different change in your life, you have to do something radically different. It's called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. It's a very powerful book. Is it New Age psychobabble? A little bit. But it's got some quantum physics elements in there. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's very, powerful. And that's what I think about when I hear this idea of the dreamer who dreams and lives inside the dream. Like, you manifest your own reality. You really do. In a way of you can view the world as a beautiful place full of love and White Lodge, or you can be scared of everything and be mad and be Black Lodge. So Truman and the boys, they arrest Chad. They say they've been watching him for months. Not sure the clarification on that. We all know he's a crook. Sounds good. Arrest him. They put him in the jail underneath, and they head out to the woods towards Jackrabbit's palace. It must be October 1st, right? And you hear the electricity crackling. You know something's up. Bobby gets them over to Jackrabbit's palace. It's a giant tree stump, and I'll put the image on the Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt, like and subscribe. The giant tree stump at the top, if you look closely, there's a, I don't know how to describe it, a sort of like a little mini tree, and it looks very similar to the evolution of the arm from episode 1, season 3, episode 1. They grab some soil to put in their pockets. Sounds very witchy. And they head 253 yards into the woods, just like was prescribed on Major Briggs' instructions. There's a very eerie feeling in this scene. It's almost like in It, when the kids go into the sewer, like something feels off. And sure enough, they get in there, and there's smoke billowing from the floor of the woods, and there's a circular, looks like the Glastonbury Grove, the circular black sludge, but it's silver. And then there's a naked woman lying on the ground with no eyeballs. Her eyes are just like scratches. And it reminded me of, I think it was episode 2 or 3, when Cooper is out in space and there's that woman with no eyeballs. And I was like, is this the same woman? And everybody looks at their watches and they're like, oh, it's 2:53, you know, because they were supposed to be out there at 2:53. And at that moment, a spiral, a vortex, a portal opens up in the sky, just like the one that Gordon Cole saw, that William Hastings took him to. Next thing you know, Andy disappears. And he manifests in the black and white room with the fireman from the very opening scene of season 3. The very opening scene was Cooper and the fireman, a.k.a. the giant, in this black and white room. And he says, I am the fireman. Now I know why we call him the fireman for sure. Now we can, you know, confirm that. And Andy's sitting there. And he's all of a sudden this device manifests into his hand and it starts emitting smoke, almost like a hallucinogen or a peyote or some kind of Native American ritual of some kind. And it goes up towards the skylight and he looks up at the skylight. And that skylight, to me, it felt like it was the other side of the circular silver sludge that we saw in the woods next to the naked woman. It almost is like the other side of it, like he's looking up from underneath, is how I felt about that. Anyways, the skylight turns into a screen and it shows Andy the greatest hits of Twin Peaks. It shows him the Trinity bomb setting off the motion of the experiment, the Bob sphere. It even shows him the God of Light woodsman, the whole Laura Palmer story with the angels from Fire Walk With Me, the two different Coopers, Mr. C and Cooper, and a vision of the electrical pole from Fire Walk With Me. I mean, it really is the greatest hits of Twin Peaks. And he takes it all in, and then he even sees himself taking Lucy down the hallway of the sheriff's department. What's that scene? We don't remember that. Well, we see a time lapse happening back in the woods. Meanwhile, at the Jackrabbit's palace, the deputies are presumably looking for Andy. But the way they film it is reminiscent of how the woodsmen maneuver. They kind of like manifest and disappear and they scramble around. Then out of nowhere, Andy shows up and he's got the naked woman in his arms. And he, with authority, says, look, this chick, she's very important. And there's people that want her dead. And Andy's super confident. I like this, Andy. Get it, bro. It's not very typical, but something is very serious with Andy at this point. And Truman and Hawk look at each other, and they have amnesia. They're like, wait a minute, what happened here? They don't even remember, right? So Andy and Lucy, so they get the naked woman. Her name is Nido, the woman with no eyes. They set her up in the jail cell to keep her safe, right? And, of course, Chad's down there, and Chad's talking trash. And then there's this other weird guy who looks kind of like a beat-up, drunken Chad who's repeating everything he hears. It's almost like doppelganger Chad. He's got blood pouring out of his mouth. Why no medical attention? I don't know. And Nato, she's making chirping sounds like a monkey or a bird or something. Then we go over to the Great Northern. And we're like, man, this is getting weird. We go to the Great Northern. James Hurley is a security guard. Him and his co-worker, Freddie Sykes, an English guy, are working. And they're just chilling on the dock. We find out that Freddie is going to be 23 years old. Again, with the 23 enigma, the law of fives, Discordianism. Very tied into the world of James Shelby Downard and the old school conspiracy folks. Synchromysticism, right? And we also hear that it's actually James's birthday, which is curious because this is the day the portal opens, right? October 1st, what Briggs told the sheriff's department, hey, head out to the woods on October 1st. So we find out that Renee, the good-looking girl who was crying during James's performance of You and I at the Roadhouse, well, she's married, and it ain't to James. Naughty, naughty James, you know? But you notice that Freddie has a green rubber glove on his hand, and he's smashing walnuts with it, and it's like, what? Well, he's going to tell us a story. It's a pretty long clip, but it's actually pretty good storytelling, and let's listen to the story of how he got this glove. It seems like nonsense now, but it's important later. Take a listen.
Come on, tell me the story. Come on.
Well, I told the doctor. I guess I can tell you. And seeing as it's your birthday, I was still living at home, see?
Where was that?
That'd be London Town, East End. About 6 months ago, after a night down at the pub with me mates, I'm walking home alone. I get this peculiar feeling as I turn into this alley I use as a shortcut. It strikes me that I'm wasting my life, Jimmy. Hanging about, hitting a pub every night, drinking, when I should be helping people. With this feeling in me, on this particular night, I see in the alleyway a nice stack of boxes. And I jumped, you know, like, for fun. I jumped onto this high stack of boxes. And all of a sudden, I was sucked up into the vortex of this massive tunnel in the air. Next thing you know, I'm floating in thin air, way up somewhere, like a void. And this bloke's there, the fireman's what he's called himself. And he says to me, go to the hardware store near your flat, and there you will find a rack of green rubber gardening gloves. One package will already be open, with only a right-handed glove inside. Purchase that package and place the glove on your right hand. Your right hand will then possess the power of an enormous pile driver. Poof, and I'm back in my room, waking up the next morning. I got up, got out of bed, dragged the comb across my head, and I went downstairs and had a cup of... Nah, just kidding about that part. So I popped round the corner to the hardware store, find a rack of gloves, and, sure enough, there's the open package with a one right hand. Off I go to the counter, lay down the package for the clerk, and he says, I can't sell you that one. You have to buy one that hasn't been opened. So I say, that's all right. I want this one. He says, I can't sell you that one. I says, listen, mate. I want to buy just the one glove and I'll pay you full price. Nah, it's already been opened. I can't sell it to you. Now, where I come from, we call a bloke like this a Jobsworth. That is a person who delights in acting in an obstructive or otherwise unhelpful manner. As in, I can't do that, it's more than my job's worth. So I says to Mr. Jobsworth, listen, I'm buying this glove. And I put my bees on the counter and walk towards the door. Well, Jobsworth leaps after me like a possessed puma, screaming that I can't have the glove from the package, which has already been opened. I bolt out the door, hit the cobbles, hoping to leave Mr. Jobsworth in the dust, slipping a glove on while I go. Now, this slows me down a mite. And before you know it, Jobsworth puts a tackle on me worthy of a red card and sends me skidding on the field. On instinct to defend myself, I pop Jobsworth one in a loaf with me green glove. I hear a crack, and by the way his head's tilted and him trying to talk, I fear I've snapped his Gregory. And then, in that moment, I remember something else that bloke up in the sky told me. Once you've got the glove on, go to Twin Peaks, Washington, United States of America. And there, you will find your destiny. So here I am, Jimmy, on your birthday. Many happy returns.
Wow. Thank you, Freddie. This is a great story.
The pleasure's all mine, sir.
Why you? I mean, why do you think the fireman picked you?
Well, that's a good question. I asked him myself. I said, why me? And he said, why not you? And when I went to buy me ticket to fly over here, they told me I already had a ticket. Don't forget, we're supposed to check the furnace.
Yeah, you wait for the delivery. Don't.
So this was a destiny given to him by the fireman to go to Twin Peaks and to have this powerful glove, all right? And now he's in Twin Peaks. So the fireman is clearly orchestrating something this whole time, from creating Laura to giving this guy powers to giving Andy the gnosis, the knowledge. Something's going on here, and the fireman is behind it. He's a god of sorts, right? In the sense of being omnipotent or whatever. So James, he heads down to a furnace room. Very, like, ominous feeling. The furnace room below the Great Northern. Like Freddy's going to jump out. That made me think of Tina from the first Nightmare on Elm Street. All right, we're almost done. Okay, so we go to Sarah Palmer, and she's out on the prowl. She heads to the bar, Elks Point number 9. And you'll notice there's also, they have fluorescent lighting for the different beers they have on tap or whatever. Well, one of them says 312. But what's interesting is that it looks like the bells in the fireman room, if you recall. I'll put the image on the Instagram. See for yourself. Let me know. And Sarah cozies up to the bar, orders a Bloody Mary. Remember she only had three bottles of vodka from Carrie's grocery store? Or she didn't even get them, I don't think. Nonetheless, she needs a little more drinky. So she's having a drink, and some trucker-looking dude down the bar, who I swear is a reincarnation of Leo Johnson. He's even got a ponytail. His shirt says, "Truck You." I mean, this is Leo Johnson, is it not? He's drinking, and he starts chatting up with Sarah. And she's like, "Piss off, dude." And he says all this rude, crude stuff. He's like, "It's a free cunt tree." And he calls her a bull dyke lesbo. I mean, total creep, right? And he says, I'm going to be crude here. He says, "You don't like to eat cunt, don't you?" "No, you like to eat cunt, don't you?" And Sarah says, "I'll eat you." And he's like, "Whatever, bitch." And she takes her face off. I took his face off. And says, "Do you really want to fuck with this?" And then bites his neck clean off and kills him. So on one hand, Sarah is some kind of source of evil and a demonic possessed entity at this point. On the other hand, I'm happy to see that. I support that kill. And what's weird is it's almost like Sarah snaps back into consciousness. Like she doesn't aware it happened because she starts screaming. And then she seems horrified, but then she seems like kind of cool about it again. Like, well, that's too bad. Very strange. Sarah Palmer clearly has a major role at the end of Twin Peaks The Return. We keep going back to her. We keep seeing things that are quite off. And then finally, we're back at the Roadhouse again. Two women talking about hanging out at the Nut House. Paula's sweater. They talk about Billy again. Again with the Billy stuff. One girl was seen Billy. Billy had this look in his eye, blood gushing out of his nose. And it made me think, is Billy the guy in the jail cell repeating everything? I don't know. The doppelganger Chad? Is that Billy? And at this point, but we know that Audrey is having sex and in love with Billy, which doesn't seem that makes sense. But at this point, we know that this girl is Tina's daughter, which corroborates what Audrey said. And remember, Audrey had a dream about Billy bleeding. And the daughter also tells us that Tina was sleeping with Billy, which is why Audrey apparently hates her. Does any of this matter? I don't know. I don't think so. So then Lissy performs the Wild, what's it called? The Wild Wild West song. Great song. And the credits roll, and that's a wrap. And we're onward and upward to Twin Peaks The Return, Part 15. There's some fear in letting go, and I promise you, episodes 16, 17, 18 are pure fire, high-octane fire. 15 is also very good. It's actually a very powerful emotional episode. So, nothing but bangers from here on out. We're going to finish strong. We're going to try to make sense of what we experienced, and then we're probably going to do it all over again, right? We're on the Samsara Twin Peaks wheel. So, thank you for listening. Thank you for staying with me in the Gray Lodge. Till next time, stay positive.